RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Every month or so, we catch up with Ivor Cummins in Ireland, and the time has come around again, and here we are. Ivor, nice to have you back. How are you doing?
Hey, Paul, doing great. You too, I hope.
Not too bad, but I have never been more, I don't even know what the word is, engaged, entertained, horrified, worried that we're heading towards some kind of global thing. And, you know, there's the Trump thing is obviously what I'm kind of referring to. So I'm sort of up in the air is probably the way I would describe myself, up in the air at the moment.
Yeah, it's a bit nuts, but in a sense, I'm inured to it. I've kind of realized years ago that, look, we're in the fourth turning. It's a massive super cycle, 80-year plus cycle. World War II was the last period. You know, the Trump shooting is just kind of a perfect part of a fourth turning. Things start getting really crazy. Bad guys push to get power. The world shifts on its axis. So you just kind of accept that. And a lot of people I know are pretty good guys. They see it in a way, or they make themselves see it for their own sanity and resilience. They see it as, you know, we're in this epic kind of era of the fourth turning, and It's exciting. It's all to play for. It's certainly not like boring, humdrum, you know, life muddles on as normal like 15 years ago. You know, it is exciting. And I know it's hard for people who feel oppressed by this and kind of frightened to feel excited, but you have to try and get yourself that frame of mind, like stoicism. Look up stoicism, learn it, live it, and just realize it is an exciting time, challenging time, and it's a time to be alive, really, in a way.
I agree. But, I mean, you couldn't write the script, could you, really? especially the Trump bit. You know, to be so close and come through in the way he did. Like I say, he couldn't write that script.
And that incredible photo with his fist in the air and the blood on the side of his face and the flag behind him.
I know.
I think it is one of those classic photos, though, that it's kind of real. So we'll knock out of the way first that it was set up and Trump's in on it to give him this opportunity. That makes zero sense to all the smartest guys in the room I know. And it's kind of simple. You would need one of the best marksmen in the world to get your ear and not your head.
Yeah,
and no way would you take the risk. So, yeah, so that's hard. Out.
Yeah, it's like landing on the moon was easier than faking it.
Yeah, and there's no way he'd take the risk, even if he was on with the bad guys and blah, blah, blah. There's a big conspiracy. I don't think there's a conspiracy. The other thing is, I mean, I saw the videos and, you know, there's a shot rings out. The Secret Service guy's on the roof in the shot. He's looking over towards the building where the young guy is, and he's not doing anything. And when the shot rings out from the young guy's AR, the Secret Service guy flinches instinctively. So there's a shot, he flinches. Trump turns. That's my read on it. It's not an amazing act of luck. Trump actually turns towards the shot, and the second shot clips his ear instead of his head. So I think this is the way that easily a sloppy assassination can turn out. And I think, yeah, the Secret Service certainly would have to suspect that that's not incompetence, that they missed the guy on the roof crawling up and the public are telling the police and that's just too sloppy for words. Now, he was on the sloping side away from them, but he would have got to the top and been over it with the gun. They would have seen him and immediately deactivated him. I mean, so
you mean blowing his head off?
Yeah, or maybe their guidelines are, if you see something and it certainly appears to be a threat, you don't immediately shoot to kill. I mean, they could put a bullet in each shoulder in a second or two.
Right, yeah.
But either way, they wouldn't simply sit there looking at him saying, hey, that kind of looks like a guy with a rifle pointing over
here. What do we do? What should we do, yeah, guys?
I better ask me boss. I don't want to screw up.
Radio
so,
in.
Yeah, you know, the Secret Service people themselves may be DEI now, and you saw the woman Secret Service who ducked down.
Yeah.
So that may be gone to a shambles, but the sharpshooters are not DEI hires. You know, they're still sharpshooting guys. So yes, collusion by all means, and by all means, you know, they got a guy to meet that young fella. He's a bit mad. They encouraged him to be more mad. They said he'd be a patriot. Trump is Hitler. You'll be the guy who got rid of Hitler. And they could have easily handled him, helped him, encouraged him with no paper trail and no possibility of discovery. And that happened before many, many times. And that's probably what it is, but we can't say. But you asked about, well, what about this idea of could Trump be controlled opposition? And I just had a couple of thoughts, but I'll let you just throw that one out first. And I have a few thoughts why he isn't, I think. I think he's kind of the real deal.
Yeah, I don't know if it goes as far as controlled opposition or... God, it's a tough one. I'm hung up on Operation Warp Speed still. I need to get possibly over that and his role in that. And... I went from a Trump fanboy, seriously, in 2016, to kind of losing the love after that. And I just wonder, is he, you know, is he the real deal? So that's not to say that he's controlled opposition, but is he the real deal? And what worries me, jumping a little ahead of controlled opposition, is the instant worship status that he has achieved. And I think people need to be clear-eyed, right? You'd agree with that. Clear-eyed.
Oh, yeah.
And try and keep a sort of like a slightly a helicopter view on things before sort of jumping in with it all. And, you know, Alex Jones is ranting away. It's the hand of God. I keep hearing the hand of God. And I can see how people could think that because it was such a close-run thing. And if it had gone... you know, a few more millimeters that it would all be over. So I'm rambling a bit, but maybe you can kind of see where I'm at.
Absolutely, yeah. And I the way I play it, like as always is, I don't let any emotion get in whatsoever. Really clinical, I have to be. Same during COVID. Or I'll fall into my own biases. So that's the danger, just like you're saying. The danger is you fall in, and once you have an affiliation with someone and you perceive them as the solution, you begin to overlook their suspicious signals. So it's too dangerous, so I don't do that. So I just watch dispassionately. And in doing so, I think, you know, Trump is, you know, loves the power he's getting, loves the adulation he's getting. So he has all those flaws, you know, which are not perfect. He's not the Messiah at all. This is for him and his legacy too. So there's a lot of selfish stuff there, I guess. That's normal. But I think he's broadly genuine, which is as good as we can hope for, because in most countries, both sides are utterly corrupt, no matter what they say. Mm-hmm. And no matter who you vote for, you get the WEF and Rockefeller, UN, etc. I think Trump truly is an alternative. And there's a few reasons I think he is. One of them actually is interesting, and I think I kept the video. I only got it last year, and it was a video of Trump when he went to Davos in the first year of his presidency, maybe the second. And Klaus Schwab is flitting around him like a nervous little girl. And I saw that with a manager's eye or a people watcher's eye. Schwab was not acting that. Schwab was extremely uncomfortable, extremely kind of, you know, concerned with this Trump figure. And clearly Trump was a problem for all of their beautiful plans that were going so splendidly for decades. So Trump was waving his hand at the media as he walked out with an entourage. And he was saying, don't worry, guys, America's not going with this globalism thing. You know, America will be great. And he's completely relaxed. And the media are all lapping this up. And Klaus Schwab is literally hovering around him like a girl in his skirts with clear concern, dismay on his face, very unhappy, very rattled. You can't feign that or act that for the camera to make people think Trump is genuine. It's impossible. Okay. So Klaus Schwab really perceives Trump as a bloody problem. And that's a huge piece of evidence for me. And then you add to that the massive 24/7 attacks on Trump's on Trump before he got in and since he got in. It's off the scale. It's beyond even their attacks on Russia, because they want to strip mine Russia, destroy Russia. Clear as day, the State Department, CIA and all that. They want to destroy Russia. Russia hasn't really done anything to them, but it's a power now and it's independent. Yeah, so they want to destroy it and get all its resources. We know that. So Trump, they've attacked so much. It can only be because they don't want him getting in their way. In other words, he's getting in their way. Yeah. Which is all we can hope for.
And he has the personality that will kind of not bow to it.
Exactly. He's very like Musk. Place,
right? Yeah.
He's very like Musk. People all say, oh, is Musk the real thing? And Musk supports Israel. Yada, yada, yada. RFK Jr., he supports Israel. The Israel thing is this thing where a lot of people who are broadly on the good side, they're completely besotted with the Israel thing. And I think that's kind of the exception to the rule. When they go that way, you got to look at broadly what they do, and does it help or seriously hinder the globalist bad guys who are the people we have a problem with? And Elon Musk's Twitter has been a lifesaver. So you can say maybe Elon is in with this crew or that crew, but his own son went trans and he's estranged from him. He clearly is upset with all the trans nonsense. He clearly is upset with the censorship. He instinctively, as an unusual person, he's obviously got an element of spectrum. A lot of the stuff they're doing upsets him. It's personal, it's real. So he might actually be connected to some bad guys and he might have sympathies for certain things we would not agree with. But broadly, he's using his money and power because he's unhappy with the way the world is going. And I think Trump is the same. And RFK clearly is unhappy with the madness and has been for decades. So I think these guys are as good as it gets. They might not be perfect, but I don't think it serves us to find every nitty gritty thing. And like, it also brings a sense of hopelessness if there's just no one to at least throw a vote at as the lesser of two evils.
Yeah. So in your mind, what happened, was that an inside kind of job with the useful idiot of the sort of trained, mind-controlled? Because the shooter, Crook, he had the central casting look of a progressive liberal. You know, he couldn't have got it better. So, you know, the look, the body type, everything, the nerdiness, it was all there. Do we consider that this could all be kind of a coincidence that looks like a setup, or do we go with setup? And you know, deep state, take him out. This is the time. Because remember what Mike Benz said. We had him on the program not too long ago, and he made this point. He said, when Biden screwed up in the debate, and the media were calling, you know, time done, when a week before they were saying he's doing great, no one from the security or intelligence community came out and said anything. They didn't support Biden. They didn't. They did for the Hunter Biden laptop. Remember that? 51 people signed the
massively.
Letter.
Yeah.
And he thought that was an ominous sort of, you know, giveaway that something wasn't quite right. And there was never anything from that community. So, What do we say?
It's hard to say. I mean, I sent out a tweet after it happened that a lot of people were doing videos and getting huge views because it was topical, but I was busy. And I just sent out a tweet and I said, root cause for this is pretty easy. To your question about like who's behind it. And I said, very likely or possible is the root cause is the legacy media and the Democrats. The insane Democrats, because they've had a hate campaign against Trump for years and they have millions of people they have driven insane with Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah.
And, you know, Washington Post, I have in front of me opinion piece. It was December 23. Yes, it's okay to compare Trump to Hitler. Don't let me stop you. And they have a picture of Trump and Hitler put together, making them look similar. And another mainstream put Trump with a little mustache on him and pretty much said the same thing. that is literally an incitement to assassination, because everyone knows the big question: if you had a chance, would you have killed Hitler before World War II?
Would have history turned out different? How many lives?
Would you have saved democracy? Would you have saved 50 million lives? They're saying he's Hitler and he's going to end democracy. They're saying it round the clock. You've seen the compilations of mainstream figures in short videos, one after the other, literally inciting violence against Trump. And years of that, it is not statistically improbable at all. In fact, it's expected that one nutter is going to turn up. And I said, the second option is that guy's a patsy, just like all the times before. Just helped along, supported in the background, and given a bit of encouragement. That's all you need to do. Let the nutter do the rest.
And everybody has their hands clean.
Exactly. You know, now JFK is clear as crystal now, and they still haven't released all the files. But if you looked at Stone's movie or looked into it, I mean, you don't have to look into it. Just the simple occurrences in the few days then and afterwards was clearly a professional hit, probably a couple of teams, and their patsy was Oswald, and he was meant to die, but he shot the policeman. I think he was meant to take him out. And then they had to get Jack Ruby, a mafia hood, to run in and shoot him. On camera. And the mafia hood apparently was a patriot. I mean, it's just laughable, right? Yeah. So you know it was a hit. But it's been done again and again and again. And once you've got enough intelligence assets on the conspiracy, if you will, you have all your plans for the cover-up in case something goes wrong. You have contingency plans, yada, yada, yada. So it's been done again and again. And this, I suppose, is probably just another one. But a bit sloppy, because in JFK's day, you could go as far as to set up shooters and even bring in international experts. You really could organize a full coup. Whereas now, I think that's less possible, just the way the modern world is and IT and the internet and stuff gets out, it gets messy. So I think they go a safer route, but less certain, where you just groom the nutter rather than actually bringing in a team. And I think that in all those circles, there is division, and that's good for us. So I believe at the top of the top table, the Rothschilds, Wagners, and the big money people, trillions of dollars, that kind of they gamed the world for the last 100 years. I think the Rockefeller State Department, CIA, et cetera, new technocracy, they're not necessarily in bed together totally. I think there's some divisiveness come in, different opinions as to where to take the madness. And likewise, within America, within FBI and CIA, I guess there's divisiveness that makes it hard for them to pull off total conspiracies, because a lot of people in there actually agree with Trump. So, you know, it's messy for them now. It's messy. And I like that.
Doesn't that mean a cornered beast is incredibly dangerous?
The downside.
And if you've got resources that, and you mentioned the figures involved, you can basically buy anything. Do you then go to the next level? You don't give up, do you?
That's the challenge. And that's perfectly in line with the fourth turning, that things get, you know, all duck or no dinner. The stakes are high. Players really put all the chips on the table. And we're seeing with the push, trying to push Russia into full war. And I know a hedge fund manager who said in 17, he was hearing from top hedge fund people, they're all frotting and excited about taking down Russia and basically strip mining it. And they had connections to US kind of State Department. And there was this buzz going on about forcing Russia into a war and then basically breaking it up for parts. They were excited. That's the kind of madness that is dangerous. The neocons, they'd be happy enough to start a moderate scale nuclear conflict because they'd see that they'd benefit from it. And they're a bit mad, if we're honest, the neocon real hardcore, a bit mad. So there's all these players and it's all to play for, but there's divisiveness and there's cornered rat definitely going on. And it's the most interesting time to be alive since the war.
Yeah. It sure is. And you wonder what the next move will be. Do you want to make any predictions? The next move is,
I think.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm watching the bird flu nonsense, and I've sent a few tweets, and one of them got taken off Facebook and one of them got taken off LinkedIn. So the very fact with less censorship than there was in some ways, and I've been getting away with a lot of stuff, interesting to see hot buttons. They didn't like the bird flu thing or session international that's going on in October this year.
Yeah,
they didn't like that. Kind of pointing at that. Interesting.
Sensitive. So I think the bird,
sensitive, you know, and like, you know, when ivermectin was a threat to the vaccine, suddenly that was the thing you got your account taken down for, even though it's only a bloody medicine that may or may not be effective. But it was a hot button because the word went out across all the media. Ivermectin's a problem. Hit it. Because it threatened the vaccine universal kind of emergency authorization. You couldn't have another alternative. The vaccine could only be rushed if there was no hope and no alternative. So that's why they went crazy. So bird flu, I don't think really it's a pandemic for the people. I suspect they wouldn't try and pull that again. There'd be too much people blowing up, I'd say, and it could be unmanageable. I think it's an anti-meat play and to keep people worried about bugs. But I don't think they'll try and lock us up based on the bird flu. Now, I could be wrong. I don't think they'll put out a really severe one. I don't think that's the way they play.
Menu.
I think it will enable to cull massive amounts of chickens in compliant countries. Like Australia's already culling huge numbers of chickens.
Yeah, millions. Yeah.
Millions. Now, in Ireland, they're not. Well, I think they know in Ireland that wouldn't wash right now.
Yeah.
People just wouldn't because bad. Well,
they already know, Ivor, who the compliant societies are. It's already been road tested. Aussies, very much so. Us, very much so. So watch out for your chickens, folks. But so they kind of have that, you know, that picture now of who, what buttons they can push on particular cultures and groups.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they've done this before because swine flu, they got to see the problem countries that didn't fall for the nonsense. And those countries got young global leaders in years in advance, media purchased, and they came down with an iron fist during COVID, like France with Macron. So swine flu pointed out to them which countries would be a problem for the next scam. And it's clear as crystal, like it's self-evident. It's not a conspiracy. It's just obvious. Yeah. So that was very interesting. One country, half of it was more French culturally. I think it was Belgium. And half was more Belgian background with even some language differences. One half, 80% or 60 or 70 took the swine flu nonsense vaccine, right? And the French half, like 8% or 6% did. And that was taken care of. Belgium had a lot of serious force on that half of the country culturally because they knew from swine flu, well, there's the place we need to bring the hammer down. So it was all clear as crystal. And they know that the bird flu nonsense, better to get it established as a nonsense narrative in a country where you can get a bit of action and have no trouble. And you're absolutely right. Australia's the classic. Which is crazy because Australia should be a country based on immigrants and, you know, tough and outback. But of course, they're all domesticated now. They're mostly in cities. It's very sad. Very sad.
Well, one similarity between Australia and New Zealand is that we're both, and we're further down the track than Australia, but they're starting to get there too. We're both feeling, both countries' cultures are feeling guilty about our colonial past.
Ah, now that's a huge thing that's being used, and it's absolutely bona fide propaganda over decades. And unfortunately, while a lot of these things are kind of grassroots, kind of social contagions that the people themselves, three generations since World War II, have now got soft, safest, virtue signaling, and hollow lives because they're all looking at their phone and all this crap and working in offices. The people themselves would be getting a bit nutty coming into this fourth turning and obsessing about things from the past that are long over and the people are long dead. There would be a bit of that, but it's massively fueled from the top. It's one of the most powerful weapons they have to divide society. You use guilt. So they all talk about racism and DEI and inclusion, but what they're doing is dividing society and causing rupture. And that, what you just said, is one of the most powerful ones. America,
and in England to an extent, but certainly Australia and New Zealand, dig up the past and make the current people feel bad. And then you can use that as excuses for more scams. So The Voice in Australia, another scam, clear as crystal from when it first arose. I think there's a similar thing Warren was visiting. We'll briefly touch on Warren in a moment. But he was talking about the Maori. They're trying to shift ownership and rights to the Maori. And of course, it's That's for a later corporate hoovering job. Because God bless the indigenous peoples, but they've had it hard, of course. A lot of alcoholism. Their leaders sometimes are shady characters, and they're very manageable and manipulatable. So if you can shift a load of rights and area rights, and Warren even said confiscating land because they may be threatened by sea rise and global warming.
Yeah, that's going down right now. Yeah.
And he says they actually want to confiscate your land if it's in an area that potentially there could be a sea rise, which is nonsense, of course.
Well, and while they're saying this, Ivor, the sea is actually retreating. The beaches are pushing out. So you can't even believe your own eyes, you know?
Exactly. It's George Orwell, 1984. The final ultimate order of the party was to not believe the evidence of your own lies. Only listen to the party. Remember Ardern, we are the sole source of truth for you. Boy. I mean, come on.
It gives me PTSD just hearing that.
What a vile woman. I mean, she has to be up there. We should have a competition for the top vile humans during all of this. But anyway, so the Maori, the idea is, yes, give a load more rights to minerals, land, rich land, and then you control them easily. Because God knows they controlled all the people during COVID. They got them to wear masks.
Yeah,
but they're not as easy as indigenous who are down on their luck, because you just feed their leaders with whiskey and money and bring them to Davos and you own them, because they don't have the power and connections to resist this takeover. So in Australia, The Voice and the Maori in New Zealand and other places, and America's doing the same thing. This all comes from the top, from the same bad guys. I mean, it's self-evident. Mm. You just read it and weep. And unfortunately, the average person says, oh, sounds like a conspiracy theory. And the irony is, because they've spent 30 or 40 years,
it is,
right, training people to believe anything that touches on people in power, maybe not being in your interest, that's all conspiracy, always.
Yeah.
I mean, Watergate.
It's sort of like an inoculation against any.
Yes. Against attention. Critical thinking.
Yeah, critical thinking.
Remember Watergate and Deep Throat and down in the car park? That got exposed by reporters. Nowadays, Watergate would be clearly a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
And the media would say it's a load of rubbish.
Who were those journalists working for, though? That's another story.
Well,
Logically happens next then, Ivor? We'll get onto another topic or two in just a moment. But what logically happens next? That's the big question.
Ah, okay. So I think the bird flu will be used for the whole anti-meat and dependency play. Probably not a plandemic. Probably wouldn't work too well. But they even had a shot at monkeypox. So they will nudge and nibble at all kinds of nonsense and see how stupid the sheep are. But I think war is probably one to be really thinking about.
Yeah.
They're fomenting war. War scares people. I was in Zurich at a meeting of a society that I was with before. We talked about it in Dubai and Istanbul. Very interesting people. But there was a discussion there about, what was it again? A fascinating point by one of the speakers. That if you think PCR was a great con trick to fool the people into being scared of a cold just by saying, oh my God, we got 20% positive. So they got this little nonsense metric that's meaningless. And look what they did with it. He said they can't pull that again too quick because people say, hold on, another pandemic? Come on.
Yeah.
But you know what they could do? If Russia set off a tactical nuclear weapon that is zero radioactivity danger to anyone, you could start testing. They've got testing all over Europe, stations, and they've got maps of radioactivity.
Yeah.
Imagine how you could use radioactivity, even though there's no threat to anyone. Imagine how you could big it up.
I can see the Geiger counters making that noise and going off the scale on the meter. Yeah.
And people are terrified of radioactivity. It's invisible and they don't understand it. But I'll tell you something that's interesting, and I was able to contribute there. I interviewed a professor of physics, Boyd, Professor Boyd in Las Vegas, because he invented the calcium scan of the heart, which I promoted for years. He invented the electron beam gun to freeze the heart. So fascinating, brilliant man. And we happened to talk about radioactivity, and I said, you get, you know, maybe half a millisievert or one millisievert, but that's trivial, right? And I knew it was trivial dose when you get the scan. People scaremongered about that. It was BS. And he talked about it, and he told me a lot more I didn't realize. He said radioactivity is grossly overrated. So he said in Chernobyl, the people who went in, right, the human robots, patriots, they died within a week or two or within a year horrifically, you know, skin falling off. It is shocking, massive dose. But the people all around who got a very high dose, way over what you should, they tracked them and there was no real excess mortality. So think of COVID. There was no excess mortality. Yeah, they had some little things and they had bits and bobs and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But there was no excess mortality. And he said in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they did a huge study and they never publicized it widely. They tracked all the people highly exposed versus not. And they saw no difference in mortality over the next 30 or 40 years.
Isn't that interesting? Okay.
Yes. So this radioactivity is the perfect scaremonger. Everyone believes it's Satan's death lick. But the reality is, hold on a minute. You look at all the new radiological accidents, except for the people who got a megadose and they died within days or weeks, pretty much the others went on. The guy in the Russian submarine lived on to his 80s, I think. Mm. And his skin was all rumpled from the massive radioactivity in that submarine when the reactor overheated. He still went on to 80. So it's one to watch if they start scaremongering us about nuclear. A full-scale war would be mega destruction. But a tactical nukes being used, they will take advantage of to scare the pants off everyone and bring in a CBDC or God knows what else.
Wow. Okay. Watch this space. Irish people waking up to the mass immigration globalist scam. A rebellion is brewing. Wow. Okay. How serious is that?
Yeah, that's a bit clickbaity, but no, it's just, it's really ongoing that the people now are wise, especially to the mass migration we talked about before. So that's a typical 100% globalist thing. We know from Robinson, from, you know, what was it? What's that awful bank? The Octopus Bank. Goldman Sachs. So the head of Goldman
Jamie
Sachs,
an Irish guy.
Yes. Well, the head of that was Peter Sutherland, an Irish guy, just a revolting globalist pig in my mind. And when he finished in Goldman Sachs, he went straight into being the head of migration in the U.S.
Convenient.
Yes. Huh? And he began to bang. Oh, he was given speeches and he basically said it out loud. In one of his big speeches with all the in-boys up the top, he said, we need to smash nationality and sovereignty in all the European states. And the method would be massive influx of very foreign people. He didn't exactly say, but there's no point bringing in loads of Poles into Ireland because they're largely Caucasian, largely European. It doesn't cause damage. And they all came in and my brother-in-law married a Polish lady. We went to Poland. That's not what they want. They want African Islam. They want ghettoization and division. And that's where all the mass migration is coming from. Clear as crystal. But the people in Ireland are now realizing that their politicians are rotten to the core. And there's a lot in Coolock in an area of Dublin recently where they're trying to shove in loads of Africans and all other kinds of people that they dragged into the country, practically, strategically, for the reasons I said. Trouble with police, the media are all on board. They keep accusing everyone of being far right and racist. These are good, decent working people whose communities are being destroyed by globalist strategies. And they're fighting back. So they're kind of burning cars, causing trouble, but they're activated now. There's a little bit of inoculation in Ireland, God may it grow, of awareness that they're being scammed. This is not about humanitarianism. This is the opposite. This is the worst people on the planet running a scam to damage your society. So that's nothing to do with humanitarianism or refugee, not refugees. They're just reaching out and bringing in very poor people from very different cultures and stuffing the country. None of them are refugees. Well, not none, but overwhelmingly, there are busloads of people that are not coming from a war-torn country at all. So there's good signs that people are beginning to not be scared by being called racist and far right, because the terms are beginning to become a joke.
Yeah, what happens when, like here, the mainstream media is definitely degrading quite rapidly. The big TV network here, which is state-owned, is in a serious loss situation now. And the legacy of what it does is just not a workable business model anymore. My point is the training device or the propaganda device that is that mainstream media, as it crumbles, it's going to be harder to do the training, isn't it? I mean, how do you get around that? You don't have that mouthpiece anymore. How do you re-sort of jig the operation?
Yeah, they predicted a lot of things and they did a great job on the Cerveza sickness nonsense. But I think that one maybe wasn't as predicted, because it's been quite rapid, a collapse in trust in the mainstream media. But I think my response to that would be double down on the other half of the strategy of propaganda, right, which is censorship. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think that's why we're seeing the panicky bums rush for hate speech laws and all of this utterly absurd madness. Hate speech, where's the problem? I don't see it. So why are they all talking about hate speech? They're not talking about important, you know, macroeconomic problems and real stuff. They're talking about hate speech, hate speech, hate speech, hate speech. And that's because they've gotten instruction, double down on the censorship because of what you said, Paul. We're losing our organ of propaganda. We're losing effectiveness. We can't suddenly make that fixed, because you're right, Paul. It's a difficult one. So double down on the other hander, in the two-hander. So I think that's what they're doing. And I'm sure they're trying to get more money into mainstream and get governments and get our tax dollars poured into mainstream, even though we hate it. Pour our money in or pour other money in and prop it up. But it is a problem for them. I think it's a great problem that they have. But one challenge is that if someone said, you know, we have 90% mistrust in the media, the polls say. But then 50% of people, if the media say what they like to hear, they go with it. So we got the kind of anti-people's bias, that even though they don't really trust the media in general, if the media says something that they like, that's their ideology, they share, and they whoop and they support the media. So people are a problem, unfortunately.
People are the problem. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad we've identified the problem.
Well, certain people are the problem, of course. Yeah, not you and people. Me.
The interesting thing, though, Ivor, it's still all is in plain sight. It's all in your face.
There's self-evident.
Yeah.
Obvious to us.
Now, you mentioned Warren. I think you're referring to Warren Matthews, New Zealander, visiting with you, or you've been catching up, been doing a bit of fishing? Is that what you've been doing?
Well, not quite fishing. I'll try and keep it short, because I'm sure your time's closing. But
sailing.
We were sailing off sorts. Well, Warren is 77 now, and he's a fascinating guy. In his late 60s, he was sailing solo on a huge boat, I don't know, like 60-foot sailing boat or something, from New Zealand to Thailand and that region.
Well,
he even fell out of the boat once, and it was 6 weeks after he got a heart valve replacement. He was feeling good. He got back in the boat, and he was over in Thailand somewhere, or Vietnam. And I won't describe the details. He described it to me, but through an accident, the wind suddenly picked up. He tumbled. The dinghy got caught on the big sailing ship. He was solo, and he ended up in the water. Luckily, a fuel tank from the dinghy was there, and he was able to use that as a flotation. And luckily, in relatively uninhabited waters, a merchant vessel saw his sailing boat, which was an autopilot heading the direction he wanted, was set up, saw it, followed it, stopped it, and backtracked its course and took him out of the water.
That's incredible, man.
Yeah, but he said, this is it. This is the end, you know. But that's the kind of guy he is. But fantastic friend since 2019. But he came with his wife, Lois, to Ireland. He's a huge supporter, kind of a founder member of RCR, of course.
Yep.
And he's always excited when I'm on, but he listens to every episode. But he came over because he's a boating person. I had an old boat, a junker. I replaced the deck, re-fiberglassed it. Never did that before, but I love new challenges. And it's a 17-foot thing. I rebuilt the cab, glassed the cab. I got a secondhand old Yamaha 30 horse engine. I had to strip down the carbs off that. I got that humming. Yeah. And Warren was there just when I got this stuff done. I've been doing it weekends for a few months. And he brought me out because I was unsure for the first time in the estuary with the currents and using the thing. And we rocketed up and down that estuary. But he had a great time. We went to the JFK Memorial Center in New Ross. We went to a local pier. We went to a local pub with classic Irish. We had a barbecue and he really had a great day and a half with Lois. We had a fantastic time.
Good to hear. And boy, you're a bit of a handyman. There's nothing like having a project like that though, is there? And what about handling fiberglass? You have to be careful with that, don't you?
Not particularly, but it's tricky. And the catalyst, you can go from 1% to 4%. You go a little too high, it goes off too quick. Yeah. You're in a panic. You got to rework. You go too low. It takes ages to go off. It slows down your progress. It's sticky. There's fibers all over your hands. One trick for anyone doing it. This is amazing. And people who are more pro than me love to hear this one and hadn't done it. You put on 3 pairs of disposable gloves real quickly. And in the middle of the job, when they're getting fouled and sticky, instead of having to take off the gloves and get a new pair,
smart.
You whip off a pair and you got 2 more underneath. Unbelievable.
But I'm going to remember that. I'm going to remember that.
Well, I do all trades as a hobby for the last 40 years since I was a teenager. And with multiple, as we moved house, we had to do up each new house. And we moved 3 or 4 times. And I used to do jobs for cash years ago on all trades. So I just ended up being able to do plumbing, electrics, you know, carpentry and woodwork to an exceptional level. Like I made all the sash windows for a house a while back. With the mechanisms out of raw lumber because they cost so much, you know, so and glaze them. So I do all trades. And you know what? If the apocalypse comes, it'll be handy, right? I might be a guy you want around.
I need some windows. Okay, then well, you're a catch. You're definitely a catch. Well, pass on our regards if you're talking to him again to Warren Matthews and thank him for his support of us. Yeah, and Ivor, it's good to catch up with you again. And I wonder, you know, we're going to talk probably in about a month or so from now. We just can't predict what's going to happen in that time, even in that short time, can we?
No, and you know what I think of, and I always love this image from Master and Commander. I read the books of that series. There's 20 of them. But the film with, an Australian, isn't it? Who was in Master and Commander the first time?
That's Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe. Well, there's a great piece in that where there's a storm and the young, new, aristocratic kind of new crew member, his arm ends up getting cut off. But the young guy is terrified and an old sailor with a grizzled face goes up to him and smiles and holds his shoulder. And then he puts up his 2 fists and tattooed across his knuckles is "Hold fast." And I always love that. Hold fast, resilience. No matter how bad it is, as Homo sapiens, we survived the Ice Age. You're resilient. You fight back. You hold on. You do not fear the outcome. All you can fear is not having done your bit to avoid a bad outcome. You know, and I just, as a final word, I really feel strongly about this. People should delve into Stoicism and begin to make it their philosophy of life. It changes everything.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.